Instead of going upstairs to the flight deck, though, Harry watched Delaney step into the lavatory, then went into the galley, sat tensely at one of the bucket seats, and kept his eye on the lav hatch. Delaney came out in less than a minute. He didn't have time to do anything with the lens assembly, Harry thought. Hell, he didn't even take the time to wash his hands. But Harry entered the lavatory anyway, kneeled down and opened the cabinet. The cartons of toilet paper were stacked just as he had left them. Taking the top few out, Harry saw the lens assembly still sitting behind them. As he put the packages back, Harry thought that so far he had proven nothing. As a detective, he was a total flop. Able One, cockpit. "Message incoming from the Pentagon," O'Banion reported. "I'm running it through Decrypt now."
"Let me see it as soon as Decrypt's finished," Colonel Christopher said.
"Right." Lieutenant Sharman's softer voice sounded in her earphone. "We're approaching North Korean territorial waters, Colonel." Karen Christopher frowned slightly. They had flown past the storm swirling across the Sea of Japan and were now over open water. Through the windscreen, Christopher could see nothing but empty ocean, gray and rippled with waves. No sign of land.
"We're 12 miles off the coast of Korea?"
"No, ma'am," Sharman replied. "The North Koreans claim territorial rights out to 200 miles.
200? Is that legal?"
"I checked the regs, Colonel. 12 miles is the international standard for territorial rights, but some countries claim exclusive economic rights out to 200. They don't allow fishing boats or stuff like that." Colonel Christopher puzzled over that for a moment.
"Better check with Washington and see what they recommend."
"It'll take a while. Communications are still all all snarled up." The colonel nodded to herself as she thought,
"We need to get this bird as close to the shoreline as possible. When those gooks pop their missiles, we've got to be close enough to nail them right away. Close enough to take more than one pop at them if we have to."
O'Banion came back on the intercom.
"Colonel, Mr. Hartunian's asking to talk to you."
"Where is he?"
"Down in the battle management compartment."
She turned to Kaufman.
"Obi, take over. Stay on this heading until we're 20 miles off the coast. Holler if I'm not back by then."
Kaufman looked resentful as usual, but he said,
20 miles.
"Right." Colonel Christopher nodded at her navigator and communications officer as she went through the flight deck and down the ladder to the tiny niche between the beam control and battle management compartments. Hartunian was standing behind the Asian-American girl, the expression on his face somewhere between grim and determined.
"Any problems, Mr. Hartunian?"
the colonel asked, barely loud enough to be heard over the rumble of the plane's engines. Hartunian gestured toward the galley as he said,
"I think we're ready, Colonel."
"You think?"
Christopher felt her brows knitting. She had wanted to make her tone light, not accusative. No sense making the nerd get sore at you, she told herself. But her words had come out as challenging, demanding. Hartunian seemed not to notice as he stepped through the open hatchway and waited for her to enter the galley. Then he closed the hatch behind her, softly, as if he didn't want anyone to hear it shut.
"Well," Colonel Christopher said,
"the hardware's in operating condition. We tested the ranging laser on the refueling plane, and it's working okay."
"Good."
With a shake of his head, Hartunian went on, "But I don't know about the people. We're just a skeleton crew, and one of us tried to sabotage the mission."